This is the Citizens Council Forum, the American viewpoint with a Southern accent, presented by the Citizens Councils of America on behalf of affiliated state organizations throughout the South. The Citizens' Councils are dedicated to states' rights and racial integrity, to individual liberty, and to race relations based on common sense, not on the power politics of left-wing pressure groups. The Citizens' Councils are primarily a means of mobilizing public opinion. Informed people will not surrender their freedom. Now, from Washington, here is your host for Citizens' Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to another in our series of regular weekly programs. We're very happy to welcome as our guest today Congressman William H. Avery, a Republican from the state of Kansas. Mr. Avery from Wakefield, Kansas, a farmer and a stockman, is now serving his third term in the House of Representatives. We're very happy to have you with us today, Mr.
Avery. Thank you, Dick. It's nice to be your guest.
Congressman Avery, you're a member of the House Interstate and Foreign Commerce Committee, which is charged with the legislation involving TV and radio operations.
That's right.
And in view of a lot of the talk about various aspects of TV and the broadcasting industry, there's been some people that said we ought to pass a law about some of these TV and radio programs. Could you give us your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know as I could entirely in the length of this program, Dick, but maybe we could paraphrase them something like this. In view of the rather unpleasant exposures that have been made recently, not only by the House Committee on Legislative Oversight, but by the Attorney General in the city of New York, there is an inclination, of course, for some members of Congress to come to the immediate conclusion that there should be a lot of vigorous regulation, not only of the networks, but a more careful review, perhaps, of the licensing qualifications of the various stations. At this time, as you well know, the only control we have over stations is over the renewal of their license, and no control over the network. Now, it may be that we should concern ourselves as a government or as an administrative agency over some of the aspects of radio and television programming, but not to the extent that it becomes a censor. I think that is the important thing we must keep in mind. It's a fine line when you separate regulation from censorship. It's who's going to make the decision.
Then, in other words, the way that the situation now is, a broadcasting station gets a license to operate in the public interest.
That's right.
And at the time that the license comes up for renewal, it must then show that it has been, in effect, operating in that public interest.
It is the responsibility of the licensee to show, without contradiction or without substantial contradiction, to the Federal Communications Commission that it is entitled for a renewal of the license, or, of course, on an original applicant, why they must show and establish they are capable and will operate in the public interest.
This would seem, then, that no further legislation, at least, is necessary to make sure that the public interest is served.
Well, in my point of view, I could certainly agree with you, although I could give you the name of quite a number of my colleagues who do not share my view on that. In my opinion, we can go back to the history of radio, pretty much, and I think it's a rather persuasive comparison to make, if you please. The only censorship we have had in the field of radio programming have been the radio listeners, the people themselves, because of their expressed and known requirement for an acceptable radio program. Radio licensees, in turn, have developed that type of program. Now, just because in the short history, and it is relatively short, television, I say, has only been mature for 5 or 6 years, and we come to this one example now of where the public interest, their responsibility in the public interest has been violated. And I think we shouldn't act in haste. We should be careful and study methodically what action we're going to take so as not to jeopardize the right of free speech that we have historically held so important in the United States of America.
Well, part of the licensee's requirements for operating in the public interest includes granting a reasonable amount of time for public service programs, for example, discussions such as the one that we're undertaking right at the moment. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, a commercial broadcaster who is serving an entire community mm-hmm. has to be careful about making sure that he gives representative groups their opportunities for this
equal
public
time.
Service time.
Equal time.
And so that the various community projects, all of which are worthwhile, can share in this public service program. Mm-hmm. But there is one specialized field that has been coming up lately more and more. That is in the field of educational TV. Mm-hmm. There's some educational radio, of course, but TV in particular has been getting a lot of comment lately, where a station can serve a relatively narrow group for a certain amount of time and then turn its attention to another group, mm-hmm. for example, classroom instruction courses mm-hmm. by TV. Mm-hmm. Have you had an opportunity to look into educational TV?
Well, yes, I have looked into it, if that is the proper way to characterize it, rather extensively. I serve on the subcommittee we describe as Communications and Power mm-hmm. of the full Interstate and Foreign Commerce Committee, and as such, we have jurisdiction, of course, over communications, as the name would indicate. And we took up this matter rather on a broad basis in the first session of the 86th Congress. We came, our subcommittee came to no final conclusion, and we deferred any ultimate conclusion on it until we had had a chance to hold some hearings throughout the country to sort of test the thinking of the people, if you please, as to what their viewpoint on educational television was. Interestingly enough, now this was before the so-called quiz scandals mm-hmm. on the networks. So I think the interest, the concern over educational television has probably somewhat increased from the standpoint that maybe we haven't utilized our spectrum to the fullest possible amount of public good in the way of educational programs. And for that reason, there is even an increased interest in educational television. I think we could conclude that most representative and responsible groups are strongly in their position supporting educational television. There is some disagreement, as usual, in a new promotion as to who ought to pay for it.
I see. Well, actually, when the FCC first made the TV allocations on a nationwide basis, certain channels were reserved in every major community and in many of the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. They were reserved specifically for educational use, and if they have not already been utilized, they are still available for educational utilization.
That's correct.
Now, in some areas of the country, of course, there has been rather extensive utilization already. Local school boards or states mm-hmm. or universities, mm-hmm. colleges have mm-hmm. gone in and are now operating mm-hmm. educational TV stations.
That's right.
Now, in other parts of the country, of course, the utilization is somewhat less at present, less mm-hmm. than a lot of people would like to see it. Mm-hmm. Is there any way that you can think of that might encourage more utilization of the channels already made available for educational TV?
Well, I think it has to become a matter of public acceptance and public education. Now, education, I don't mean academic education. I mean probably a broadening of point of view as to the possibilities of educational television. The easy answer as for an incentive, of course, would be to say, well, yes, we should pass legislation authorizing the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare to make certain grants and aids as an inducement for certain local areas or educational units to engage themselves or to employ educational television as one of the media that they use in their instructional program. However, on that particular point, I have some pretty definite ideas. That was one of the general questions that we took up on this series of hearings mm-hmm. Following our staying over of any final action on this bill before the Congress last year. The basic question is, how much responsibility does the federal government have in this field of educational television? Now, of course, when we come to preserving the channels, to assigning and preserving the channels, that by the very nature of the jurisdiction involved could only be the responsibility and function of the federal government. And certainly I would go all the way in that respect that these channels should be preserved and a well-balanced number of channels between UHF and VHF. But when we come down to whether the federal government has any rightful responsibility in providing grants of aid and assistance, be it by outright grant or on a matching basis, I have very serious reservations. I haven't been convinced on that yet, Dick.
Well, isn't there always a problem, too, of when federal money enters into the picture, federal control rather frequently follows?
Well, that has been my premise. I have been opposed to federal aid to education, except with some rather rare exceptions I have gone along. But I have voted against federal aid to education in the general context of the word. And to me, I see no distinction between federal education for initiating or activating a television channel than I do towards federal aid to education down on the local level in the accepted methods of education we now know.
Then it would seem to you then, if I may be allowed to summarize, that still the best way to assure an active educational television program in one's home community is to enlist active community-wide support.
In my opinion, that's right. And the strong proponents will say, well, we just haven't got the money. But after traveling around over the country with this and other committees and doing a considerable amount of work on it, may I add, I find they can have anything they want for education. Now, it's just a matter of how bad they want it. They can always afford a field house to play basketball. They can always have things like that because they demand it. Now, if this is that important, I think they can afford this, too.
Congressman Avery, I'd like to thank you very much for being with us today, sir.
Thank you, Dick. It's a pleasure to be on your program, and I hope that we have done a little, at least, to create some curiosity on educational television.
Well, I'm sure you have, and I'm sure that our audience will want to get more information on this subject. Our guest on today's program has been Congressman William H. Avery, a Republican from Wakefield, Kansas. We'll be back again next week at the same time with another in what we hope will be an interesting series of discussions. Till then, Dick Morphew saying, thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
This forum has been presented by the Citizens Councils of America. We Americans are threatened with the loss of many of our hard-won freedoms, the historic right of each sovereign state to govern itself without interference from political courts, the right of the individual to choose his own associates without the prodding of federal bayonets, and the right of each citizen to make up his own mind in the American way, free from alien propaganda. Each of us has a job to do. Your support is needed. For information, write Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We will be happy to send you, without obligation, copies of our literature showing how you can help. Just write Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. The South is organizing. Join with those who stand publicly, fearlessly, and determined that these freedoms will be maintained.